and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Happy 4th of July. In honor of the holiday, we have some comedy and some history for your enjoyment. After the young Tom Jefferson from Cavalcade, we have an episode of the Magnificent Montague sitcom. Cavalcade of America was dramatized American history, sponsored by DuPont Chemicals. This week we have an episode that dramatizes Tom Jefferson's part in the Declaration of Independence and the birth of the United States of America. Enjoy Cavalcade of America, Young Tom Jefferson, first broadcast May 25th, 1942 on NBC.
Starring Tyrone Power as Young Tom Jefferson on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. July 4th, 1776. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth...
Those are the opening words of the Declaration of Independence. Words which fixed a people's mind on liberty and independence. They were written by Thomas Jefferson 160 years ago in a quiet little room in Philadelphia. No man was at his shoulder to whisper suggestions. No ancient tomes were dog-eared for paraphrasing. The thoughts were his and his alone. What he wrote was the experience of his own eyes and ears, injustices he'd encountered, human miseries he'd seen, recollection of ideals he had dreamed. It is of these simple and profound thoughts that this Cavalcade play is about. A play called Young Tom Jefferson, in which Tyrone Power is the star.
You've been most kind and helpful to me, gentlemen.
On the contrary, I should think, Mr. Jefferson, Mr. Adams and I have placed the whole burden on your shoulders.
I'm all too much aware of the responsibility, Dr. Franklin. I trust you will bear with me. I work slowly.
Well, if mankind has waited 2,000 years for what we are about to say, they doubtless can afford to wait another week or two.
And yet you are aware our need is pressing, unless this declaration can unite the states behind
that,
us.
That, Mr. Adams, is the thought that weighs most heavily upon me.
If there's anything you need of us.
Oh, thank you.
Well, then, Mr. Jefferson, it appears the matter now is in your hands.
Oh, by the way, had you thought what to call this document?
Why, I thought merely to call it by the simplest name, Declaration of Independence.
Oh, excellent. Simple and direct. Well, then, good night, Mr. Jefferson.
Good night, sir.
Good night, gentlemen. Good night.
Slowly, young Thomas Jefferson walks over to the little desk before the fire. Slowly sits down before the first blank piece of paper. Slowly takes the goose quill pen between his fingers. The day has come. The little room is silent, save for the faint whispering of the fire. Slowly, the pen moves. On the blank paper, the first momentous words appear.
When, in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth...
Whence come these words? Out of what earliest dreams and questioning, out of what hopes and memories, what wisdom or beauty of the past? Out of what well-remembered thoughts and phrases exchanged in other days with some nameless stranger or beloved friend? A lifetime is in these words, a life of many printed pages, of growth and pondering, of talking and listening. Slowly from the dark labyrinth of the memory mind come thoughts first fixed in years long gone by. Thoughts to be stated now on the paper before him.
It was old Jed who said it. What he would do if he were free. Work, he said. Work and build a home. Raise a family. Strange to remember the song they were singing. Jed sitting in his cabin door. No man should be born to rank or power. All men in the eyes of their creator are as one. What do you call that song, Jed?
That, Marse Tom? Nothing special. Just a song about Moses.
Is that your favorite song, Jed?
Well, we like it all right, Marse Tom.
Why do you like it so much?
Why? Why, of course, it goes good.
Is it because Moses led the people out of slavery?
That might be one reason.
What would you do if you were free?
Work. Same as I'm working now.
What else?
Oh, maybe I'd go into the back country, get me a little farm, raise me a family of my own. And...
Is that what you think there is to being free?
That's the most of it, I reckon.
Oh, I think there's more to it than that, Jed. That's hard work, too, but I wouldn't want to be a slave.
There is more than that, Marse Tom. I don't know whether I can exactly explain it to you, being as you've never been a slave. I've never been free. But I reckon it's something about the way you feel inside yourself. Something in the way you walk, work, and the way you laugh. Maybe it don't seem like such a big thing if you got it. But I reckon it's a mighty big thing if you ain't got it.
You're right, Jed. It's a big thing to have and not to have.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights,
some of the words are written
among men.
There were those who said it could not be, and later those who fought to make it so. The pen moves on, and other words appear, words to bring men from their farms and shops, from ships and country houses, men willing to die for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Words come more readily now as thought provokes thought and memory stirs memory. The years of reading, of seeing, of thinking, the years of preparation, of proving themselves. It's a long time since Tom Jefferson resolved that he would master words and not be their slave. But as he writes, fleeting memories passed swiftly through his mind. Memories of an upstairs chamber of the plantation house at Shadwell, where a gaunt, giant figure of a man lies quietly in a four-poster bed. Peter Jefferson, his father, ill and slowly dying.
The next speech, where it says, I have lived long enough. Read that, Tom.
I have lived long enough. My way of life has fallen into the sear, the yellow leaf. And that which should accompany old age as honor, love, obedience, troops of friends, I must not look to have. But in their stead, curses. Not loud, but deep. Mouth honor. Breath, which the poor heart would fain deny and dare not.
Yes, that's it. My, what a power over words he had, that Shakespeare.
A pity, though, to put such fine words in the mouth of such a tyrant as Macbeth.
That's the man's genius, Tom. That's one reason Macbeth became a king.
He became a king because he murdered all who stood in his path.
Does every murderer become a king? Ah, no, Tom. It's not as easy as that.
Macbeth had eloquence to make men follow him in spite of his crimes. There have been others like him. There'll be more to follow.
Then it behooves all honest men to be more eloquent than the tyrants.
True, Tom, if they can. Tom, what you've just said puts me in mind of something I've meant to speak of for some time.
What, Father?
There's one thing I want you to promise me.
Yes, Father? What is it?
It's what we were speaking of just now. The power of words. I've always been a strong man. I've made my way with brawn and sweat. But often I've thought how much better I could have served my family and my country if I had had more learning. I want you to be what I could not.
You've been everything to us that anyone could ask.
Go on with your schooling, Tom, no matter what. Read. Read everything you can. By reading words, you learn to use them. To me, they've always been a tyrant. Let you be their master. This country one day will have need of men who know the power of words. Promise me you'll do this, Tom.
I promise, Father.
Now read the next speech. You know the one?
Yes, Father. Canst thou not minister to a mind diseased? Pluck from the memory a rooted sorrow. Raise out the written troubles of the brain.
Out of the shadows of the past, the memory of an anxious father. And other memories crowding back, the events and turmoil of the hastening years. Of young George Washington helping to win for England all the frontier country from the Appalachians to the Mississippi. The Stamp Act passed by Parliament and 9 colonies gathered in convention to protest. Memories of himself training to be a lawyer, of a corridor outside the courtroom in Richmond, of a gangling farmer from the back country talking to him.
And what happened then?
Well, Mr. Jefferson, when this tax collector came, I told him I could give him nothing, as I had nothing.
And what did he say?
Say, he just laughed at me. He went out to the shed. I followed him. He found the grain I had there, only enough to get us through the winter at the very most. He said he knew I was lying, and he was going to take the grain. Then's when I went back to the house and I got my rifle.
He had no right to take your grain.
That's how I figured.
Did you threaten him?
Well, sir, I was pretty mad. I was born in this country. The Crown gave me no help. I cleared that land with my own hands, and I don't aim to be starved out of it by any thieving tax collector. That's what I told him. I was holding my rifle when I said it.
It was unwise, perhaps, but you were provoked. And you were within your rights in the protection of your property.
What do you reckon they'll do to me?
Oh, the worst, I think, is to hold you in debt until such time as you can pay. But if I know the temper of juries nowadays, you'll get off scot-free. Oh, the court is sitting. We'd best go in.
Clerk will call the first case.
Crown versus John Randall on the complaint of His Majesty's Officer of Excise, William Sharp.
Is the defendant represented by counsel?
I am representing the defendant. May it please your lordship.
How do you plead for your client?
Not guilty, your lordship. And I respectfully move for a jury trial for my client at an early session.
Motion denied. This is no case for a jury, Mr. Jefferson.
Your lordship, every subject has a right to a trial by jury.
Not in these times.
But your lordship, even if my client were a common thief...
Mr. Jefferson, I'm charging your client with sedition.
Sedition?
His utterances to an officer of the Crown were of a most seditious nature, such as might well cause him to be deported. I sentence him to 1 year in prison. Next case.
Your lordship.
Well?
Your lordship, I do not intend to let this man go to prison. I shall put up bond for his appearance and carry his case to Parliament if necessary. But one thing I must tell your lordship. There is no sedition in these colonies. There is no disloyalty to the Crown or to its officers. Yet. But if it comes, and come it surely will if such injustices persist, you, your lordship, and those like you will have brought it on yourselves as the natural and inexorable fruits of your own tyranny.
The Virginia House of Burgesses, in there in 1769 at a front bench sits young Tom Jefferson, just 26 years old.
His Excellency, the Governor.
Gentlemen, I have before me the document of your complaint directed at His Majesty the King and presumably at myself as his appointed governor of this colony. These complaints ostensibly concern themselves with certain alleged injustices in the matter of taxation. I find them far more serious than that. To my mind, what you have written falls little short of treason. Therefore, in accordance with the power vested in me, I hereby declare this assembly dissolved. I declare this assembly dissolved.
Memories of large and small injustices and the first warnings of the conflict. Now written down, now recorded for all posterity.
Swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Quartering large bodies of armed troops among us. Depriving us of the benefits of trial by jury. Armies to complete the works of death and tyranny.
Listening to Young Tom Jefferson, starring Tyrone Power on the Cavalcade of America. As our play continues, a young couple is playing a duet in the spacious living room of a plantation home. The boy is Tom Jefferson. Seated at the harpsichord is the daughter of the house, Miss Martha Wales.
Oh, that was nice, wasn't it?
You play beautifully, Miss Martha.
Do I? Why, then I must say at least as much for you. But I really mean it.
Well, so did I, Miss Martha.
Oh, sometimes I wish I were a man.
Why so?
Because the times are so exciting. And when women are so left out of it. What can a woman do but learn to dance and keep a household and play the spinet? And you men are in the thick of every battle, fighting with all your strength for things that, well, that women sometimes scarcely understand or care about.
Well, perhaps it's by women's inspiration that men do these things.
Is it? Is it the inspiration of a woman that has given you your reputation as a radical, Mr. Jefferson?
A radical?
Oh, I hear reports more frequently than you would think. And far from good ones from some of our English friends. You put yourself in some danger, Mr. Jefferson.
Does that trouble you?
I am troubled for the safety of any of my friends.
Oh, I would not trouble you for all the world, Miss Martha. But if I loved a woman and hoped to marry her, I would want to make a home for her and for our children in a free land. And...
Yes?
And if the land we lived in were not free, but overrun with tyranny, then for this woman whom I loved and for the country that I love, I would have no other course but to pledge my life, my fortune, and my sacred honor in the cause of freedom.
Yes.
And if this woman whom I loved were you...
Were me?
Yes, Martha. What would you say then?
I would say yes.
And for this declaration he has written, we mutually pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. The man at the desk writes on into the night. Philadelphia's asleep, and except for the regular footsteps of the watch, there is no sound. But in the mind of Tom Jefferson dart sharp and violent memories. Memories of wrongs to be no longer tolerated.
He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny. We tried to prevent it. We tried petitions. Petitions answered with more abuse. firing on the crowd in Boston, taxing without consent. It couldn't have been stopped. Inevitable. Inevitable. And they cried peace. There were those who thought they could have peace.
The memories grow shorter now. Thoughts span only the weeks and months, the year at most. In his mind, he moves back through time to March of the year before, to the Provincial Convention of Virginia, called into extraordinary session. He remembers talking with a tall, gaunt man whose gestures are explosive, whose eyes are quick and piercing.
I tell you, Tom, I cannot for the life of me understand the mettle of these delegates of ours. Half the country up in arms, and they prattle on like so many old women.
If anyone can rouse them, you can.
I'll rouse them. I'll rouse them if they're men and can be roused.
Order! Order, please!
When will you speak?
Now.
The Provincial Convention is now in session.
Mr. President!
The chair recognizes the gentleman.
Mr. President, gentlemen, this is no time for ceremony. The question before the House is one of awful moment to this country. For my own part, I consider it as nothing less than a question: freedom or slavery.
Young Tom Jefferson leans forward in his seat, his eyes fixed on the speaker. The House sits spellbound. They've heard this man many times before, but never have they heard him as he is today. Are they those who sense the historic import of this hour? Perhaps. For not only young Tom Jefferson, but men long generations after will remember what is spoken here today.
The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it the gentlemen wish? What would you have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Memories of but a few short months ago, the eloquence of Patrick Henry, and perhaps the words of a dying boy. There had been battles now. Lexington and Concord, Ticonderoga, Bunker Hill. Men had been wounded. Men had been killed.
All these in a single battle?
Ambushed by Indians. These are only the men from Philadelphia.
Mr. Jefferson.
Yes?
You must lie quietly, my boy. But there's something I want to say to Mr. Jefferson.
Is there something you want me to do? About your family or...
Well, not exactly, but we haven't done too well so far, have we?
You've done all that mortal men could do.
Well, maybe, but when we're out there in the woods, some of the men got talking. You know how soldiers talk? They don't mean half of it.
I know.
And it isn't that they have any doubts. They know that when it's over, we're going to be free.
Yes, we shall.
I knew that. But that's what I told them. But you see, nobody's ever come right out and said so. The leaders, I mean.
Is that what the soldiers want? A proclamation telling what we're fighting for?
Yes, sir.
When you rejoin your company, you tell the men there will be such a proclamation very soon.
I'll tell them. But you're sure?
Very sure.
And you won't forget?
No. I won't forget. Of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind.
The work is done. The day has come. Young Thomas Jefferson has spoken for the ages.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain
unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation.
Whence came these words? Out of the eloquence of statesmen and the plain words of simple men. Words to remember now. Words to rededicate the hopes and aspirations of all men to the sure and certain victory of universal liberty and freedom.
And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Thank you, Tyrone Power. Our original story tonight was written especially for Cavalcade by Robert Richards. The orchestra and original musical score on this program were under the personal direction of Robert Armbruster. Tyrone Power appeared through courtesy of 20th Century Fox, in whose production, This Above All, he may now be seen. Ray Collins appeared tonight through courtesy of RKO. This is John Heaston sending best wishes from the DuPont Company.
And came to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Monty Woolley played the acerbic Shakespearean actor who makes his living on radio in a kiddie program as Uncle Goodhart. You'll love his 4th of July adventure. Enjoy the magnificent Montague 4th of July picnic. First broadcast June 30th, 1951 on NBC.
The Magnificent Montague, starring Monty Woolley. Yes, it's the Magnificent Montague, the Saturday night transcribed feature on NBC's All-Star Festival of Comedy, Music, Mystery, and Drama. Brought to you by Chesterfield. Always milder, better tasting, cooler smoking, plus no unpleasant aftertaste. By Anacin for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. And by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, and first in television. Before we hear from the Magnificent Montague, let's hear from Chesterfield.
You see it in the newspapers. No unpleasant aftertaste. You hear it on the radio. No unpleasant aftertaste. You see it on television. No unpleasant aftertaste when you smoke Chesterfield. It's the biggest plus in cigarette history.
Science discovered it. You can prove it.
Science discovered that of all brands tested, Chesterfield, and only Chesterfield, leaves no unpleasant aftertaste.
Prove it yourself. Smoke a pack of Chesterfields. They're always milder, better tasting, cooler smoking. And Chesterfield is the cigarette that leaves no unpleasant aftertaste.
That's the biggest plus in cigarette history.
No unpleasant aftertaste.
Science discovered it. Prove it yourself. Buy Chesterfields today.
And now, the Magnificent Montague. Although Edwin, the Magnificent Montague, left the stage to become Uncle Goodhart, hero of an afternoon radio program, he has remained a member and a moving force of the Proscenium Club, that stalwart organization of Shakespearean actors who live in an unemployed world of their own. All year long, the Proscenium Club waits for their one big event, their annual 4th of July picnic and outing at Shakespeare Grove. It is the morning of the great event. In the Montague apartment, his wife Lily and Agnes the maid are making up lunch baskets. Agnes is very happy.
Have you got the mustard, mustard, mustard? Have you got the pickles, pickles, pickles? Have you got the relish, relish, relish? Have you got the...
Agnes!
Yeah, honey?
Oh, you have the lunch basket almost packed.
What a picnic. Look at this food. Fried chicken, potato salad, deviled eggs, chocolate cake. Boy, are those ants going to live.
Oh, everything looks so... Oh, wait, Agnes.
What, honey?
I just remembered. Edwin hates deviled eggs.
So what?
Well, it'll spoil the picnic for him.
What picnic?
Well, Agnes, isn't that lunch for the Proscenium Club 4th of July picnic?
Are you kidding? This is for my picnic.
Your picnic?
Yeah, my social club. The unattached girls of East 37th Street's throwing one.
Oh, dear. I thought that lunch was for Edwin.
Oh, don't worry. I'll fix him one right now.
Oh, good.
Have I got the poison, poison, poison? Have I got the arsenic, arsenic, arsenic?
Agnes, why'd you come along with us?
Honey, please don't trap me into one of those outdoor memorial services the Proscenium Club calls a picnic.
But, Agnes, it's always great fun. That picnic with Edwin's old actor friends.
Fun? With those stuffy old actors?
Oh, Agnes, you know on the picnic they're very informal.
Oh, they're a real fun-loving bunch of madcaps. Sitting around under the trees with their spats unbuttoned.
Agnes, you know there's always swimming.
Now, that's worth seeing. The swimming suits those old fogies climb into.
They may be a little conservative and old-fashioned.
Whatever it is, it's the only place you can still see a double-breasted bathing suit with a belt in the back.
Oh, come now, Agnes.
The campfire with those long, dull recitations from Shakespeare. And then your husband takes over with his annual rendering of Hamlet's soliloquy. I can still hear the voice ringing through the woods.
Mm, it really gets them.
It must. Last year, 200 moose came running looking for me.
Oh, Agnes, it won't be the same without you.
No, honey, I'm all set to go with the unattached girls of East 37th Street. The entertainment committee's lined up a boat ride up to Bear Mountain. The invitation says campfire, songs, and dancing.
Dancing at Bear Mountain? Oh, then you all have dates.
Dates? Those girls? Are you kidding?
Well, who are you going to dance with?
The bears, I guess.
Oh, Agnes.
Wait till the bears get a load of my club. There'll be an early hibernation this year.
Oh, come along to the Proscenium Club picnic with us, Agnes. Edwin will be... Uh-oh, I hear him. He's
out. Now comes the warming of the magnificent Montague's tonsils. Air raid, air raid. Go to your shelter.
Agnes, please.
Good morning, Lily.
Good morning, Edwin.
Gad, you look lovely this morning, Lily.
Good morning, Mr. Montague.
Gad.
Oh, now, Edwin, Agnes is very attractive this morning.
Attractive? Lily, must she always wear those curlers in her hair when she's trying to attract lightning?
Look who's talking about beauty, the face with the hanging gardens.
Oh, please stop. Now, both of you.
It's so nice to have a man around the house, and we're stuck with a monster.
Ah, Independence Day. This is the beginning of the fourth. Must we have a maid who talks as if she'd just finished a fifth?
Agnes, don't answer him. Bring in Edwin's breakfast.
Ah, breakfast. My morning tussle with Tomaine.
Oh, stop picking on her. You have a big day in front of you. Right after your radio broadcast this afternoon, we're going to the Proscenium Club annual picnic.
Yes, Lily, tonight... Around the campfire, with all my faithful friends of the stage around me, I can forget for a moment that I, the magnificent Montague, deserted the theater for radio. From Hamlet to Uncle Goodhart is 5 times a week. Aye, what a rogue and peasant slave am I. My offense is rank, oh guilty conscience. Villainy, I am thy chief.
What do you want with your eggs, Ham? I mean, what do you want with your eggs? Ham? Well, do me something over the slip of the tongue.
Agnes, if that tongue of yours ever slipped, it would have hit the ground.
Edwin, don't feel so guilty about going into radio. Tonight, when you give your annual reading of Hamlet's soliloquy, you'll again be the magnificent Montague. Mm. Don't you think you'd better rehearse it?
I rehearse Hamlet's soliloquy? Oh, well, shame on you, Lily. I know it, and I know the back of my own hand. To be or not to be, that is the problem.
That is the question.
That is the question. Whether it is safer in the mind to...
Nobler in the mind.
Nobler in the mind to suffer the arrows and slings...
Slings and arrows.
Slings and arrows of courageous fortune.
Outrageous fortune.
Outrageous fortune. Or to take arms against a pack of trouble.
A sea of trouble.
A sea of trouble.
A mess of trouble.
A mess of trouble.
This is fun.
Quiet. To die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance to wake.
Perchance to dream.
Perchance to dream.
Perchance to snore.
Perchance to... The lake, get her out of here.
Quiet, Agnes. Go on.
To die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance to dream. Hey, there's the rub.
Oh, bravo, Edwin.
And you thought I didn't remember it.
Mr. Montague, you sure know it like the back of your own hand.
Thank you.
You must have been wearing gloves for 50 years.
Excuse me, Agnes, for exposing your delicate brain to culture. Hereafter, with you in the room, we will only quote from the racing form.
Oh, never mind, Agnes, Edwin. You sounded wonderful. They'll cheer you at the campfire tonight. I've got to get things ready for the picnic.
Wait, Lily.
What is it, Edwin?
Lily, I'm not going.
Edwin? Well, you haven't missed a proscenium club 4th of July picnic in your whole life.
I know, but Lily, this year I can't face it.
Edward.
Lily, the club never found out. I've deserted their ranks for the gold of radio. I'm not going. It's a mockery.
Oh, Edwin, the proscenium picnic is more than just a group of Shakespearean actors having an outing.
I know. It's the 4th of July.
It's more than just the date of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It's where we first met.
And the day it was signed.
Quiet, Lily. Now I remember we did meet at a proscenium club picnic.
I was in the Garrick Gaieties at the time and came to the picnic with one of the fellows from the show.
And I was playing King Lear. Now, what girl did I bring?
Betsy Ross.
Please. Remember we sat next to each other at the campfire, singing the big song of that year. Now, what was it?
Marching through Georgia.
All right, Agnes, just for that, no kennel ration for you tonight.
Oh, what a picnic that was. You were after me all day. How you flirted.
Yes, how you ran from me. Oh, you acted so coy. You played so hard to get.
You were so hard to take.
Please, Agnes, these are our memories. Oh, Edwin, we must go to that picnic.
Lily, we'll find that same tree we carved our initials in.
That little brook you carried me across.
It's still all there, Lily. The same tree, the same brook, same moon, the same two people, you and I.
Hello, young lovers, whoever you are. Hello, young lovers.
Oh, quiet.
I was just trying to help you recapture that mad moment.
Ah, yes, we were mad.
Mad? You must have been nuts.
Lily, when we see the little tree again where we carved our initials, something new is going to be hanging from it. Agnes.
Then you're going to the picnic, Edwin?
Am I promised a kiss in the moonlight from a certain beautiful lady?
If a certain handsome and dashing gentleman is there to carry a certain lady across the brook again... How can I refuse?
I'm going to be there.
I'm going to be there.
I'm going to be sick.
So help me, Lily, I'm going to kill her.
You're going to be late for your broadcast, and we all have to get ready for the picnic.
I'll pick you and Agnes up right after my broadcast.
Oh, Edwin, Agnes can't go on the picnic with us.
She can't?
No, she's going up the river with her friends.
I knew it. The Kapalma Committee is back.
Oh, no, Edwin. Agnes has an outing of her own to go to. For the first time, she won't be with us.
Shakespeare Grove and no Agnes. This is really going to be a picnic. Goodbye!
We'll be back with the Magnificent Montague in just a moment. If you suffer from pains of headaches, neuritis, and neuralgia, you should discover what many thousands have known for years, that Anacin brings incredibly fast, effective relief. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription, That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Probably at some time you have received an envelope containing Anacin tablets from your physician or dentist. Thousands of people have been introduced to Anacin this way. Try Anacin yourself the next time you suffer from the pains of a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia. You'll be delighted at how quickly relief can come. Anacin is spelled A-N-A-C-I-N. Your druggist has Anacin in handy boxes of 12 and 30 tablets and economical family-sized bottles of 50 and 100 for your medicine cabinet. Ask for Anacin today. And now, back to the Magnificent Montague. With thoughts of the picnic on his mind, he is just finishing his Uncle Goodhart radio program. Listen.
Come, come, Ronald. All fun-loving boys celebrate the 4th of July. Some shoot firecrackers. Some light the skyrockets. You, Ronald, like to blow open banks, say. Dear listeners, this is just an example of the trouble you can get into on 4th of July. That is why your Uncle Goodhart has been urging you to spend the 4th of July at home, safe from accidents, and you will live once again to greet the new day with your eyes high into the sun and light.
So ends another episode of Uncle Goodhart. And now, stand by as we announce the lucky winners of the Uncle Goodhart Letter Writing Contest. The prize-winning letter on the subject, How I Would Spend the 4th of July at Home with Uncle Goodhart, was written in by Mr. and Mrs. Stonewall Putu of Hemlock Hill, Tennessee. Mr. and Mrs. Putu are on their way to New York, all expenses paid to fulfill their heart's desire. They will spend the 4th of July in the happy home of Uncle Goodhart.
Off the air, Mr. Montague. Good show.
Oh, that was a beaut. How do I keep out of jail?
Ask our director, Mr. Zinser. Had a lot of heart to it, didn't it, Zinser?
Oh, yes, sirree. That was a real doother.
Oh, shut up, Zinser.
Yes, sir.
Springer, what is he mumbling about?
I distinctly heard the announcer say something about someone winning a contest about the 4th of July.
Oh, you mean the How I Would Spend My 4th of July in Uncle Goodhart's Home.
How I Would Spend My What With Whom?
Zinser, didn't you explain?
You tell him.
Zinser!
Oh, dear. Well, you see, Mr. Montague, the people who won the contest get to spend 4th of July in your house. Don't hit me.
Zinser, my home is not a one-night stand for drooling idiots dragged in from the hinterlands by flugel soap.
Yeah, but Mr. Montague, Mr. and Mrs. Patu won the contest in good faith.
It was a national contest. The federal government have laws guaranteeing the prize.
Good. Let the government be their host. Let them stay at Blair House.
Mr. Montague, this will mean trouble for you.
Gentlemen, and I use the word loosely, I'm going out on a picnic today.
Mr. Montague, you can't go out. You've been campaigning for people to stay home on the 4th.
We announced the winner would spend the 4th of July with you and get everything they mentioned in the letter.
Get everything they mentioned? Where's the letter? Read it. Go on, Zinser.
It says, round about sundown, Ma and I would climb into our Sunday go-to-meeting clothes and show up at dear Uncle Goodhart's diggings.
Yeah?
Ma would give Uncle Goodhart's wife her own recipe for Southern Dixie goulash, which dear Aunt Goodhart would start cooking for dinner.
Yeah?
Then we would all sit around the fireplace, singing, gossiping, and playing the melodeon, and just a sitting and listening to Uncle Goodhart's homey philosophy.
Yeah.
Signed, Mr. and Mrs. Stonewall Patu. That's all, Mr. Montague.
It is?
Yes.
Oh, no. You think I'm turning my apartment into a sharecropper's villa?
Mr. Montague, you have a contract.
But I must go to my picnic.
Mr. Montague, they're coming in by bus. After 2 days and nights riding, they'll be dead tired.
Yeah, they'll probably fall
asleep. That's it. Now, Zinser, when you get them off that bus,
I want you to take them sightseeing.
Sightseeing in this heat? They won't make it.
Fine. When you arrive at my apartment with them at 6 o'clock, and when I open the door, I want them to fall in. Out cold.
If there was any other way.
Oh, this is a fine time to tell me to cancel my picnic. I got a right to live, too.
Agnes, I told you we were expecting Mr. and Mrs. Patou.
Well, I think it's shameful getting those people tired just so we can walk out on them.
And what did you want me to do? Sit around all night with them hog calling?
Well, Edmund, it may kill them.
Oh, that's Zinza and the Patous. Come in. Zinza!
Water.
Grab him. Don't let him fall. Agnes, a glass of water. Zinza, are you all right?
I'm dehydrated. Walking in that sun.
Oh, easy, old man. There you are. Where are the Patous?
Right here. Mr. and Mrs. Patou, this is Uncle Goodhart.
Howdy. It's Uncle Goodhart.
Yee-hoo!
What's that?
That's the rebel yell, Mr. Montague. He does it every 10 minutes. My eardrums went on the third one.
Oh, Zinza, you're shot. You'd better go.
Uncle Goodhart, begging your pardon, sir, but it gives me great pride to present the little lady who I'm proud, mighty proud to say is my wife, Emmy May.
Well, land, thanks a lot, my dear. If last week anyone was to tell me I'd be here little old New York and meet y'all, I want to say you're just plump old gentlemen, and you better watch
out. All right, Emmy.
She's a little loose in the lips.
Well, where do we start, Uncle?
I guess you're kind of tired. If you'd like to lie down, the beds are all...
Mighty neighborly, Uncle Goodhart. But if you don't mind, I'll just stand.
Stand?
Been riding on a bus 2 days and 3 nights. I'm kind of saddle sore. If you get what I mean.
Oh, no.
Why, coming through Charleston, the fella come up to him on the bus, and this stranger says him all fat and fatty. He says this.
All right, right Emmy. She does take off.
Did the Patous arrive?
Why, Uncle Goodhart, don't tell me this pretty little heifer sidling up to us is your wife, Auntie Goodhart.
Yes, the pretty little heifer is my wife. Billy, Mr. and Mrs. Patou.
Welcome to New York, and welcome to our home.
I do declare, I thought when we left that little old Mason Dixon life, we left hospitality behind us. And here, y'all talk like you've known us all our
lives. All right, Emmy. Well, what are you women folks standing around for? Get in the kitchen.
Well, I got the beds all right, Oaks. They're here, huh?
This is Agnes.
Well, well. And am I having the honor of meeting the fair daughter of your family?
Mighty beautiful. Beautiful, my dear Mr. Patou. I do declare you are stretching southern chivalry to the breaking point. This is Agnes, our maid.
Your maid? Got one of those, huh? Your Abe Lincoln took ours away. What are your plans, Uncle?
Right now, I'm thinking of personally firing on Fort Sumter and starting the whole war over again.
Well, what are you women folks standing around here gassing for? I'm hungry. My stomach's hollering. Send it down, boy. Send it down.
Well, dinner is...
You all are going to eat on the Patous tonight. Just like I said in our letter. MMA, fetch me the suitcase.
Suitcase?
Yes, sir. We brung our own victuals. Hey, Mrs. Goodhart, in this suitcase, we got all the makings for MMA's Dixie Goulash. It's chock full of hog jowls, turnip greens, hominy grits, fatback, chitlins, black-eyed peas. And for flavoring, a couple of squirrel heads. Careful when you open it up, honey. Been riding on top of the bus for 2 days. Might be a little high. What's the matter, Uncle? You look a little green.
I'll be all right.
Can't wait to wrap your gums around it, hey? Tell his missus how to make it, MMA.
Let's go, Agnes.
Okay, you don't mind if I eat the suitcase?
Get, Agnes.
Now, let's sit down by the fireplace. like we said in the letter, and sing some of them oldies but goodies.
Well, I'm afraid I...
In the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the Lonesome Fire.
Now that was a meal. How about it, Mrs. Goodhart? There's still one squirrel head left.
No, thank you.
Why, honey, you didn't taste enough to keep a boll weevil crawling. Hey, whatever did happen to Uncle Goodhart? He swallowed one mouthful and took off like a hound dog dipped in turpentine. Don't explain it to him, Emmy.
He'll be out in a minute. Agnes, will you clear the table?
Clear it? I wouldn't touch it.
Ah, here's Uncle.
Excuse me. I'm still a little shaky. Lily, would you step out here?
Well, what is it, Edmund?
Lily, we've got to get them to sleep.
Edmund, after that meal they put down, they can only stay awake another few minutes.
Lily, we've got to put them to sleep.
Well, do your Hamlet soliloquy. That hasn't missed yet.
Look, I saw him yawn. I'll go back.
Mighty tired after that meal.
Oh, now, here, take this easy chair. Just sink into it.
Usually after dinner, Stonewall usually just sits around sucking on his teeth with his belt off and his stomach just a growling.
Say, hey, how about another song?
Wait, you just relax. Let me read you my philosophy, like you said in your letter. Ever hear of a writer called Shakespeare?
Shakespeare? Can't say that I have. But Emmy May here, she was a high school teacher in Hemlock Hills. Emmy May, you ever hear of Shakespeare?
No, but I declare we used to do a heap of reading out of C.S. Robot.
All right, Emmy.
Agnes, will you play the melodeon the studio sent up?
Just like we asked for in the letter.
Go ahead, Agnes. Stand by with the pillows, Lily.
Mighty pretty. Isn't it, Emmy May?
So, well, I do declare I'm just...
All right, Emmy May. Relax, my dear Mr. and Mrs. Patou. Let me read you Hamlet's soliloquy.
Watch that, Uncle. There are women in the room.
Now, relax. Listen. To be or not to be, that is the question.
Pretty. Mighty pretty.
Whether it is nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, To sleep, perchance to dream.
They're asleep.
Already?
Congratulations, that's a new record.
Let's go.
No, let's make sure they're asleep.
Mr. Patou? Mrs. Patou? That's it, Lily. The lunch baskets. On to the picnic.
Here, Edmund, let's go. Hurry, Agnes.
Coming.
Emmy May?
Yeah.
Is the old goat and his wife gone?
Yeah.
I thought we'd be hung up with them forever.
Oh, Stonewall, you're a caution.
And now let's celebrate the 4th as it should be celebrated. Mrs. Patou, if you'll take my arm, we'll go out and get low dead. It's a glorious 4th of July.
Here's a word from RCA Victor. It will pay you to remember this name, the RCA Victor Regency. Yes, remember the Regency. Remember the Regency when you buy television. If it's value you want, remember the Regency. If it's performance you want, remember the Regency. And if it's quality you want, remember the Regency. Here is the world's finest television, RCA Victor 17-inch million-proof television, quality proven in over 2 million homes. television with the clearest, brightest, steadiest pictures ever. And the Regency is more than a television set. Its superb console cabinet is a fine furniture piece, too. A magnificent example of RCA Victor craftsmanship that you'll be proud to have in your home. The Regency is available now at your RCA Victor dealers. Ask for it by name. Yes, remember the Regency, the console television that brings you more for your money. Write that name down now. The RCA Victor Regency. Listen again next week, friends, to The Magnificent Montague, starring Monty Woolley. The Saturday night transcribed feature on NBC's All-Star Festival of Comedy, Music, Mystery, and Drama. Brought to you by Allison for fast relief from pain of headache, neuritis, and neuralgia. And by RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, and first in television. The Magnificent Montague was written by Nat Hiken and Billy Friedberg. Ann Seymour was Lily. Pert Kelton was Agnes. Also heard tonight were Art Carney, Johnny Gibson, John Griggs, and Ann Petoniak. Jack Ward was at the organ. This is Don Pardo speaking.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying, so long for a while.